This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, Stella Dora workers soldier on to save jobs.
And now, more than 90 days since the military coup d'etat in Honduras, President Zelaya returned to join the resistance movement in the final stretch of the fight to restore constitutional order.
How is Zelaya lining up his support and strategy? How are the masses responding? And what has been the role of the United States? We're joined by Tim Russo from outside the embassy, correspondent from Free Speech Radio News, who's been reporting live from Tegucigalpa, Honduras, since the return of President Zelaya, and with Andre Contreras, director of the program on the Americas, Nonviolence International, who's presently in the Brazilian embassy in Honduras, where President Zelaya has taken refuge.
Tim, hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
President Zelaya had made a call for people to come in from the countryside to amass in the capital in response to the increasing repression.
What we saw this morning time in Tegucigalpa was not really a huge mobilization into the city center. This was mainly caused by what we're calling a preemptive strike on the part of the de facto government regime. They call a general decree restricting many constitutional rights of Hondurans. Within those rights that they restricted and explicitly prohibited was the gathering of groups of people. They called it unauthorized, so gathering would not be permitted in Tegucigalpa or the rest of the country. Some of the other decrees issues dealt with in the decree were transit. That meant that roadblocks were placed in several parts of the country in order to keep people from making their way to Tegucigalpa.
Tim, maybe you could move a little bit away. It's a bit hard to hear from you. Maybe we can get a little bit better quality. And I hope our listeners bear with us. This is an actuality right on the streets of Tegucigalpa, Honduras, so we're going to do the best we can. But we were just picking up Oh, this sounds a little bit better. I'm sorry.
We saw a large military presence in the streets this morning time in front of the Pedagogical University, where hundreds of people did try to make it out to converge. Unfortunately, they were not able to march because they were cut off at the front and the back of their demonstration by the riot police that finally members of the popular movement Rafael Alegria and Berta Cáceres organized to negotiate with the police. The negotiation with the police allowed members to stay put where they were up in the movement and wait there for much of the day. The movement decided to hang out on the street in front of the Pedagogical University to keep people from falling into any sort of provocation with the police so there would be no police repression or detention. Right now, we're actually at the funeral of Wendy Elizabeth Avila, whose body was just brought to the cemetery on the outskirts of Tegucigalpa. She was the latest victim of the police violence here. She died over the weekend after having been subjected to excessive amounts of tear gas when the Brazilian embassy was broken up. She had been hospitalized. She was a 24-year-old student that had formed part of the motorcycle brigade that had been accompanying the resistance movement for the last 92 days. So we're actually here right now at her funeral. She's been, her casket was just brought in. There are hundreds of people from the resistance movement, friends and families, members from the motorcycle brigade as well, that have come about 15 kilometers outside of Tegucigalpa in order to honor her, in order to celebrate with her at this point. Her husband, Edwin, is here as well. And we've been following the movement today. The movement from the Pedagogical University, the resistance, was able to negotiate space passes from the university, marching single file, being accompanied by riot police who have accompanied this procession all the way to the cemetery as well. The police negotiated with demonstrators to not repress the demonstration, to not repress the people, respecting, as we can call it, their right to come and mourn the loss of a member of the movement. This is what we're seeing right now. This is very significant. Wendy was the first of the deaths since the coup that the woman. Women have been hugely important in the demonstrations in the movement here in Honduras and in Tegucigalpa. And really, they've gathered now. Hundreds of people keep arriving in their vehicles, off their motorcycles, in buses, in order to mourn Wendy's death.
We also just reached Andres Contreras, who's in the embassy now, and we want to get some thoughts from him. Andres, hi.
Good to talk with you and greet the listeners.
Andres, with the increased repression in Honduras right now, has it manifested itself with the increased pressure on the embassy and also the ultimatum given by the coup regime in Honduras to the Brazilian government with respect to surrendering President Zelaya?
With regard to both of those realities, there has not been any direct increased repression against the embassy. However, it has increased tension, knowing that throughout the country, supporters of democracy are undergoing severe repression just for gathering, just for speaking out. We know that radio stations have been closed and television station 36. And so the restrictions on freedom of the press, as well as movement and freedom of thought and gathering, all of these affect the entire country. And even though that has not had a direct impact here at the embassy, it has very much caused an increased amount of alarm, knowing that thousands and thousands of Hondurans are being repressed as a result of it.
There was an ultimatum put out by the rogue government, the coupsters, that there are 10 days, essentially, for President Zelaya to either leave the country or come out of the embassy towards arrest. And the implication or the innuendo was that there would be a siege on the Brazilian embassy. What is your sense from inside the embassy of what the strategy is now?
The actual ultimatum was directed to the government of Brazil by the de facto regime, saying that they insist on knowing what the status is of President Zelaya in the embassy. Is he a political refugee or what? And if there is no answer after 10 days, then the de facto rogue government is threatening to get rid of the diplomatic immunity offered to all embassies and are protected by the Vienna Convention. If that is removed, then this building and compound will no longer have that protection, and then the police and military could easily raid it, just like they have so many other buildings since the coup itself and the 92 days of resistance to the coup. So in terms of preparing for what could happen, I can just describe to you, there was a prayer circle this morning here at the embassy led by Father Andres Tamayo. There have been yoga exercises, and right now there's drumming and dancing. So basically, most of what's happening is just keeping our spirits high here in the embassy compound, both for the press as well as for the supporters of President Zelaya and his family and his security detail.
I wanted to bring Tim Russo back into the picture. Tim?
Hi.
I wanted to ask you about the opposition, the people who are protesting the Micheletti regime and supporting President Zelaya right now. Who are the opposition? I know the teachers' union is very active, but who else is active in the movement?
And Tim, we've been told that two of the newspapers were shut down and there's a clampdown even further on any democratic expression. So if you could address that as well.
The opposition movement, or what here is called the resistance movement, is made up of very wide and very diverse sectors from Honduran society. Those sectors include, as you mentioned, the teachers' union. It includes also the private sector union, like the bottling union that has been one of the very significant in the role that they've played, loaning their infrastructure to the popular assemblies, the people's meetings that they've been having every Sunday in order to take and make decisions about the movement's next move. It's made up of the Lenca indigenous people. It's made up of the Chorti indigenous people. It's made up of campesinos, agrarian workers. It's made up of the Garifuna Afro-indigenous sector from the northern coast. It's made up of the Mosquitos. So it's very diverse. There's many middle-class people involved in the movement as well. There's students that are involved. Again, as I mentioned, Wendy, whose funeral we're at right now, was a student. She was a middle-class person, turning then to the repression of the media, especially the repression of the national media. Andres mentioned earlier that Radio Globo and Canal 36 were operation this morning that took both of them off of the air. Several cameras and transmission equipment were decommissioned and confiscated from both of those outlets. Also, a Guatemalan TV outlet had their cameras confiscated while they were covering some of the action. We're hearing of other stories as well. Just earlier, a young man, photographer and writer for a newspaper called El Libertador, had been taken by the police. He showed up later this afternoon with signs of torture. He said he was beaten by the police and he had cigarette burns on his chest. This is the sort of that we were seeing over the last days. And these are measures that are being directed directly towards the media. That now, because of this presidential decree, the military and the police have absolute authority to shut down any media outlet that they deem has defamed any public official or has, as they call it, made any sort of attempt against human dignity. This is a very arbitrary element that allows the military and the police to deem any media outlet an enemy of the state, basically, for publishing anything that is against human dignity.
What do you think is going to happen now? What is your understanding of what the Micheletti government may do?
What the government said in a press conference, it was led by Carlos Lopez, who's the foreign minister for the de facto government. He said that the government has its own solutions that it can come up with that are based on internal dialogues. They don't need foreign intervention into resolving these problems. They don't think that foreign involvement is adequate. They want to follow the Honduran law and Honduran constitution and dialogue here among themselves. While at the same time we see on the ground, there's no space for dialogue. There's been no move towards dialogue, but rather a move towards locking Zelaya in, challenging the international community, and very little dialogue, if any dialogue at all, with the resistance movement, which we've seen the only dialogue between the resistance movement and the de facto government has been on the streets when the resistance movement tries to dialogue with the police so that they will not be repressed. For Latin America, for the Honduran people, the issue is hugely significant. As many have said, turns a tendency that has been broken over the last several decades in Latin America, and in the last decade, a tendency towards looking to have a social movement, the popular movement, from sectors that have been historically denied access to government, denied access to social programs, involved in the making of those programs.
We want to just give Andres, in the last 2 minutes, the last word from the Brazilian embassy.
What we should expect is that the people of Honduras, after 92 days, will continue. This is the third month anniversary of the coup, and they continue with absolute perseverance. What is being called for is for U.S. policy to step up its pressure against this regime. And we have a very disappointing message from the State Department calling President Zelaya's return to this country that where he was democratically elected. And U.S. policy is now saying that was a foolish move. This is absolutely despicable that the U.S. is calling it foolish for him to return to his own country. So the U.S. has not done anything with regard to a trade embargo against this coup regime, which is what they've been doing for decades against Cuba. The U.S. continues to train Honduran soldiers at the School of the Americas, now known as WINSEC. The U.S. has not even officially declared that a military coup has occurred in Honduras with regard to Section 7008 of the Foreign Assistance Act. And the U.S. must insist that the international community give an ultimatum to the coup regime in terms of following the declarations of both the United Nations and the Organization of American States and the San Jose Accords, which President Zelaya has fully accepted. So the U.S. has a very, very direct responsibility in complicity with the coup, having trained the key general, General Romeo Vasquez Velasquez, as the key coup leader, and the ongoing training that's happening at the School of the Americas. So because of this complicity especially, the U.S. must do everything it can to pressure this de facto regime to leave power and stop repressing the people. They have really committed atrocious violations of human rights against the people. But in spite of all of that, they continue to resist, they continue to rise up and to defend the return of their president to this country, and they continue to be celebrating here in the embassy as well as around the country.
Andres Contreras, Director of Program on the Americas, Nonviolence International, who is in the Brazilian embassy with President Zelaya, and Tim Russo, correspondent of Free Speech Radio News. Both of you have been filing absolutely vital reports reports, and the only reports of its kind that we have heard in the United States. I'd like to thank both of you, and I hope our listeners appreciate both the difficulty that we went through to bring you these reports, and also, please, brothers, do stay safe, and we continue to support you and your work, and of course, the government of President Zelaya. Thank you both.
Back in New York City, Anti-Union Lance, Inc., based in North Carolina, is poised to buy Stellodoro cookies. And if they do, the Bronx plant will be shut, and its unionized workers, who have waged a courageous struggle for more than a year, will lose their jobs.
So the Stellodoro workers and their supporters brought their pleas to keep the plant in New York to Goldman Sachs, one of Lance's high-profile investors, and then to Mayor Bloomberg to intervene to keep Stellodoro in the Bronx. Now to another line of march, the line of march of the Stellodoro workers.
Goldman Sachs, we're here to say, don't steal our jobs away. Goldman Sachs, Springwood, Lance, Golden Foils, and Stella plant.
Whose factory?
Our factory.
Whose jobs?
Our jobs.
Our jobs.
Beth is going to read to you a letter the Nurses Association put out.
This struggle has been about workers' livelihoods and families and communities. But the only language these corporate predators speak is money. Well, we can speak that language too. In the first of what I hope is one of many union actions, my union, the New York State Nurses Association, has passed a resolution to divest their pension funds from Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to read you the letter that was sent to Dolores Bamford, portfolio manager, Goldman Sachs, the board of directors of the New York State Nurses Association, representing the professional interests of more than 240,000 registered nurses in New York State, is strongly objecting to corporations that engage in anti-union activity. Lance has evidenced anti-union activity historically and currently as it projects moving the Stellodoro factory out of the Bronx, displacing 136 workers and a high-quality factory that has provided jobs and stability to the Bronx for over 60 years. Goldman Sachs has a lucrative interest in Lance, Inc. The Nurses Association Board has passed a resolution to divest its holdings in Goldman Sachs until such time as support for corporations that engage in anti-union activity is stopped.
Yeah.
NYSNA is also sharing this correspondence with other unions and professional associations, encouraging them to take a stand for workers everywhere and divest holdings in your firm until such time as Goldman Sachs no longer supports anti-union corporations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kick the bankers in the ass. Power to the working class.
Kick the bankers in the ass.
Power to the working class.
Mike Filippo of Stellodoro workers.
Yeah, the only language these people understand is when they hurt their pocket. They have no heart. They don't have no feelings to feel bad about working families losing their jobs. So the only way we can hurt these people is taking the funds away from them. This is the only language they understand. So we have to continue to do that. Not only the nurses, every city agency, every company who have union people working there, to our pension funds, to take away the funds from Greenwood and Goldman Sachs.
George.
I wanted to introduce you, George Kasai. He's one of the best captains on the strike. and he's standing with us like every other Stellador employee, strong. So he have a few things to say, only a few.
What's up, guys? How you doing today? Very good. Nice to see you. Without you, we couldn't be here. But one thing I will remind you is that it's not over until it's over. So we're going to fight all the way. Doesn't matter how big they are. We're going to fight them, and we're going to win this war. We're going to win.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Whose jobs?
Our jobs.
Whose factory?
Our factory.
Backers say, cut back. Workers say,
fight back.
Workers say,
fight back.
Workers say,
fight back.
The treasurer of the professional staff of Congress, CUNY, Mike Fabregan.
Yes, he has stood with Stellador workers from the beginning. We've had support groups. We've turned people out. We've provided resources. We've worked to try to move the rest of the labor movement to make them move and be part of a movement in relationship to workers across the city. We stand with the workers from Stellador. Their fate is our fate. Their circumstance is our circumstance. Anyone working in the public sector knows that, in fact, the public workers are under attack, and in large part, when they can't get away with what they're getting away with private sector workers, the next step is public sector workers or any other part of the workforce.
That's right.
It's our responsibility to be here. It's our responsibility to make certain that this factory doesn't leave the Bronx, doesn't leave the city, that the workers here have not only a home, but that the Bronx is not further devastated as well as a result of the economic disinvestment up there. We stand with the Stellador workers because it's the right thing to do. We stand with the workers because our fate is bundled up with their fate. We stand with the workers because tomorrow it will be us, and today we must stand with them.
Right. Yeah. The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated. Obreros unidos jamás serán vencidos.
I'm Doug Cunningham. I'm a pastor of New Day Church in the Bronx. Got off the subway, easy to find Goldman Sachs. Just ask anybody in a suit. But do they know where the Bronx is? Does Mayor Bloomberg know where the Bronx is? He's the mayor of the whole city, not just Manhattan, and not just the billionaires on Wall Street. We are the people of the Bronx. We care about the people of the Bronx. This strike does not just affect the workers, although they're the ones bearing the brunt of it. It involves the entire community. The young people, the children, the families that will be put out of work, the families not be able to pay their rent. This affects all of us. We're here to stand in solidarity, to say that we're not going to allow a plant that's been here since the 1930s, provided good livelihood for our community, to be closed.
Kick the workers in the ass. Power to the working class. Kick the bankers in the ass.
Yeah. Take the factory.
So I want to thank everybody, every supporter, every union for coming here and support us. And we come here to City Hall to say to Mr. Bloomberg, shame on him because he don't do nothing. Absolutely nothing to help Stellador people, okay? And that's why we're here, for him to hear us to say shame on you because you're leaving 165 people in the street and you don't do nothing about it to help us. I'm sure if you make a phone call, something was gonna be changed, but he didn't wanna do anything. So all this thing he say about keeping jobs in New York, I don't believe him, okay? So we're gonna scream to him. He's a liar because he don't keep no jobs in New York. He lets the jobs go.
If it's Mike Gimble,
I bring you solidarity from the Civil Service Technical Guild Local 375 of DC 37.
Yes.
We've been there from the beginning. We are with you completely. This is a crime that's taking place. Anything more than stealing people's livelihoods here. You have a factory which people have invested their lives in, real investing of 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of their lives. Also, the city, you purchased all the machinery that's in Stellador. They signed an agreement with the city of New York where they gave $9 million to the company to bring those machines in on the promise that they would stay here in New York. Now, isn't that a crime? Where is the mayor? Why aren't they there to stop this theft? This is supposed to be the representative of the people of New York, but it's the representative, it seems, of Brinwood, of Lance, of Goldman Sachs. We have to fight to make sure that this plant stays in the Bronx. We will win. Stella will win. We are Stella. We are Stella. We are Stella.
We are Stella. We are Stella.
Hi, my name is Maria Espinosa. I'm a mother of three kids. I've been working in Stella Dora for 9 years already. We struggled there with this winter, cold weather, snow, raining. There we had to celebrate Thanksgiving, we had to celebrate Halloween, we celebrate Christmas, we celebrate New Year, and we celebrate Thanksgiving. We celebrate the 14th Valentine's Day too. So that year, it was very hard for me. I had to bring my baby to the strike because I don't have nowhere to bring it. It was very hard for the baby too. It wasn't easy for us. What they wanted to do to us is not fair. We had to keep fighting. Okay, I'm a young mother. I have to keep working. Now I don't know what I'm going to do because what they wanted to do to us. We're going to keep fighting because it's not fair. We are in America, and we know that we're going to win this fight.
Keep Stella in the Bronx.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.